on one up top. Bug on one up top. All the other formations, they surely have to stop. Bug on one up top. Bug on one up top. Jamie and Jordan, the bullshit never stops.
You are listening to the One Up Top podcast, hosted by Jamie and Jordan. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and all of our social media outlets at One Up Top Podcast.
And a very big welcome back to this week's episode of One Up Top. The Bows ascended upon the second city to claim their rightful spot on top of the league, as they should be. And this week I'm delighted to be joined by comedian, broadcaster, actor.
Bullshitter, Jordan.
Bullshitter. I'm going to guess after this list of lies. Mr. Eric Lawler, big Bows fan, of course, Eric.
Great to be here, and honour to be on the One Up Top podcast, finally.
Here you are, last year, I suppose. Yeah. Last time we seen yourself, you were giving a Michael Collins-esque speech on Vicar Street.
Oh, Jesus, what a
telling
night.
Telling everyone that Bows are back.
Yeah, what a night it was. I suppose that was the first time I got to really know yourself and Jamie, because we were working on it, creating the show and all that, and it was brilliant that night to see it all coming to fruition. It was an amazing night, and one I think people really enjoyed, you know, but especially for the family, it was an amazing thing that we did for them, and they're still very grateful to us, you know. So, but yous boys, he's knocked it out of the park. Obviously, both yous were a little bit nervous. I mean, you'll be honest, Sean, you were a little bit nervous, weren't you, going in?
Because sure.
Vicar Street, like, you know, it's 1,000 people, and you're going out, like, it's already doing a podcast in a room or whatever, but when you have to do a live podcast in front of a big crowd. And I could sense, even when we got there that early, to vote yourself and Jamie were a little bit nervous, a little bit, you know, a bit of a hyper. What do we do? but you just nailed it. Absolutely fucking nailed it. It was the perfect pitch. You just didn't need any help whatsoever. It was great.
When we got down to Vicar Street, I was actually buzzing all day. And then I think it came to, we were meant to be on stage at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I was completely fine. I was actually buzzing. Nervous buzzing, but still buzzing. I remember, never forget it, the clock hit 7:30 and I'm looking and I felt violently ill. And I was like, well, walking to the toilet.
Shit's about to get real.
I'm going to get sick. I was just thinking to myself, I can't do this. I'm actually going to get sick here. Like, what the fuck am I going to do? But so we went downstairs, and the funny thing is, you're obviously good doing your chat as you went out. Me and Jane are peeking through the blinds, but what people don't know is there was one Mr. Devine sitting on the steps with his head in his hands saying, "Oh, I'm shitting myself too." So we weren't the only two nervous there. But
what a baptism of fire for the gaffer. Fair play to him for doing it, like, you know, and agreeing to do it as well, like, you know. But I think that's a measure of the man. I think he's really kind of, since he's joined, he's just immersed himself in the club and all aspects of it. Like, he's really got into it, like, you know. So, and a great start on Friday as well. So yeah, long may that continue.
And I suppose we'll get into it, and live match at RT. I don't think you made a trip down yourself, Eric.
No, John. Unfortunately, I'm in a job where it requires me to work a lot of Friday nights. So I was working Friday night, and I didn't get to see the game. But I did have updates coming through on the phone. Me young fella Alex was down there, and straight away, before the game even started, he was texting me going, "Dad, the place is hopping. This is, the atmosphere is electric, you know, particularly from the Bows fans, like, you know, there's always that new season bounce, that optimism, isn't there?" And then, like, during the gig, you see a text coming up, 1-0, go into Alex's WhatsApps, and he's like, when he's shouting, he types everything in caps. "What a fucking goal. We're back, we're gonna win the league, we're playing great football." And it's like, oh, brilliant. And then when I seen it go to 2-0, I was like, oh wow, hang on a second. You know, where's his balls are 2-0 up in any game, like, you know what I mean? And then they got one back across to do, and you're like, oh, bollocks, here we go again. And thankfully, they held out. So I watched the whole match on the player then, just to see, because
Replaced Pornhub with a different weekend.
Yeah. Well, I knew it was coming on the podcast as well, Jordan. I wanted to do some research. You know what I mean? But it was an impressive performance, particularly the first hour anyway, 70 minutes maybe. They were like head and shoulders above Cork. Cork obviously new to the league, a lot of new players who probably never played at that level before. But they're a big club, Cork, massive support. I do believe they'll turn it around eventually, you know what I mean? But Bows were too good for them, too fast, too quick to the ball, too aggressive, and just looked fitter than them or something. I don't know what it was. It just looked like, at times it looked like men against boys. Yeah, particularly when Afolabi was on the ball.
I think Colin Bourne said that at halftime again, it was men against boys.
Yeah.
I think, as you can probably hear from my voice, I'm a little bit hoarse there from down there. But
that was another great thing about it, Jordan. All I could hear was the Bows fans singing the whole game.
I'd put it in my top five Bowls away fixtures.
Really, yeah.
And for atmosphere, it's definitely up there. It's up there with Derry in the cup that time.
Oh, that's like, one of my favourites.
It was, yeah, from start to finish, the whole place was bouncing. The atmosphere's been questioned with Bowls fans the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's been hit and miss for certain games, but I've never seen the way end so packed.
Yeah.
To the rafters, everybody making sure that they were joining in.
And United, yeah.
And United, even, yeah. I think the boy, after we conceded the goal, you know, as it does, it goes a little bit silent. And everyone's a bit, for fuck's sake, here we bleed and go again. The wind sort of ran a bit down the push line, lifted it, said, come on.
Alex said that, yeah. To the away fans. That's brilliant to see.
To a massive response. And
yeah.
It kept going to the end of the game. But yeah, you're right. It was very much a dominant display from Bowles. I think it took us 10 minutes to settle. The midfield looked eager to win every ball. You know, it was the first time in a while I've seen a Bowles team win the second balls.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of time. Sometimes it's luck, it doesn't bounce you. But a lot of them is because who fucking wants it more?
Yeah,
we felt throughout the game, Bowles did want that more. And the constant pressure from the midfield told we turned over the play for the second goal.
So many times, yeah. We were outstanding. Like, I mean, you look at the midfield, like Adam McDonald is, you know, in from Sligo. I was hugely impressed with him. I think he covers so much ground. But I was saying to him before we went to recording, Jordan, I remember him kind of vaguely playing for Sligo, if I'm honest. But I always thought he was one of these kind of, A baller, like, almost like Wardy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's fancy on the ball, whatever. But he's got so much aggression. He loves a tackle. He loves leaving the boot in, like, you know. And he could be a really, really good signer for us this year. I thought Connolly was great in that he just never stopped running. And I love the fact that he was getting stick off the Cork fans.
He was a wind-up merchant. Yeah. Well. Like, I think he got down to the corner in the second half. And he picked up the ball and it was a goal kick, but he kept wrapping the ball around his hands around the corner flag. And, you know, just fucking, it just annoys people. And I can't make, you know, the next one of the season make a stupid tackle.
Yeah, because they're so infuriated.
And I think you need that. And I don't think he's the kind of player that gets led away easy. If what was happening to him, he's like, look, I'll have a bit of crack here.
Yeah.
And I know he'll come out on top. And I think it's important to have those shithouses in your team.
Absolutely, 100%. I think a lot of time over the last couple of years, Bowes have been too nice. We've been too nice. We didn't have anyone in the team who's prepared to fucking stick someone on someone else. And
particularly last year, it was a fucking team of our series.
Let's never talk about last season. That was a horrible season.
Two goals, of course, came from a Horton header. A great work to corner. I think you said Gary Cronin had worked on it with him the day before the match.
Yeah.
And how many times did we see under Keith Long a short corner last season that probably never really beat and got to the 6-yard box or anywhere near it?
I think last season, I keep mentioning Alex, because me and Alex, that's all we talk about was Bowes. And he says, when is the last time we scored McCorner? And I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember.
Mikey Barker probably again. Waterford four years ago.
Yeah, I think it probably was. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. But it was brilliantly worked. Afolabi, beautiful little exchange. But Ali Coote, special mention for Ali Coote. I thought Ali Coote was gone. I thought Ali Coote was leaving us.
He was one of those players that, you know, everyone's probably thought was part of the rot last year.
Yeah.
And maybe he was part of the toxicity that came around. But, you know, I think he's proven himself this year that he wants to knuckle down and fucking get stuck in. I was talking to a pal of his and over in Scotland, and he has said that. He said he wants to get down the season.
Yeah.
Fucking, he's buzzing for it. Like,
I had a little exchange with him as well, and he said he loves the new setup, the full-time setup. He said there's a really positive atmosphere down in training and all that. The squad, he says not only Devine, but your man Cronin as well, bringing in these new ideas and all that, and he just feels refreshed. And he got his hair cut.
Yeah, no, if you ever go around with a buzz cut, there must be an anything. Paddy has it as well, Bucco has it. But a few of them have it. But yeah, that setup is to be probably be touched on there. From what I gather is, they go down there in the morning, they have their breakfast there.
Yeah.
They train, they have their lunch, they go in after, they do their video work.
Yeah.
After the video work, they go do their gym sessions.
Last year, Jordan, right, Bowes players would train for 9 hours during the week, all right? This year, it's up to 42 hours. Now, obviously, that's not all training.
Yeah,
a lot of it's data analysis. And it's,
which is science.
It's a huge part of the game, the modern game.
Yeah.
And also the fact that, and then they're doing their strength and conditioning, they're doing yoga and all this kind of stuff, like real, like modern, and they have the facilities down there, so why not avail of them, like, it's, you know?
Absolutely. If you want to be a professional club, then deal with it at whatever level possible.
Yeah.
And we're probably on par maybe with most English clubs, with League One, Championship, 100%, probably, even when 100%,
but facilities, definitely, yeah.
So hopefully now we can make the most of it, and the players seem to have really bought into it. I think a couple of them had passed comments and said, like, from the players that had gone and come back, it's like, this is a completely, it's like walking into a new football club.
Which is great
to see, and, you know, that itself will bring players in.
Absolutely. When they see them training facilities, and obviously Oh, so I'm able to pay a bit more money now. You know, we've got
the begging balls we put away for a few more years until Mutti spends it all again.
Everyone sees them jerseys and goes, oh, there's another million this year. Like that new Palestine jersey, that's going to fucking make a fortune. It really is, like, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so back to the game, like, one thing that I don't think we can keep going back to long, but we probably have a bit more strength this year. The bench was used.
Yeah.
And it was empty.
And the good options.
Good not options just, to come on. And there were times at the end where, you know, your three new forwards on it was Dean Williams, McDade and Twardek.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though it's so early in the season, there was times where they knew when to press and when not to press. And it's the 85th minute. And that's obviously because your five subs, that helps as well. But, you know, just those ability to be able to press and not press when you have that many legs and you're able to shuffle up the bench. Long wasn't the biggest fan of using the bench at times.
Yeah.
Whether that's because he didn't believe in the quality he had in it or he was just had so much faith in the team he had on the pitch. Yeah. But
and like you mentioned McDade there, like he avoided a lot of people last year. People were like, I'm not really sure about him. You'd see the odd little flash and you go, then you're going, But I was very impressed with him the other night. He came on early enough. Like he came on like after like 50 minutes or something for Akintunde. And he ran his bollocks off. As you said, he was pressing and pressing and pressing, got in a few nice challenges as well, and didn't give the ball away. He didn't look to do that spectacularly. He was just neat and tidy, just gave it to someone else who was probably more creative or whatever, like, you know. But I thought McDade, now, for somebody who I thought was another one that was gone out of the club, I thought he was decent, I thought I'd written him off mentally.
Yeah. We get rid of him.
Yeah.
And I think he could be valuable as a squad player.
Definitely.
And hopefully he can kick on with a full-time setup and a full season of housing. We can get the most out of him. I wanted to touch on the couple of mistakes that were made in both ends.
Yeah.
A tale of two keepers, but they probably had a similar tale. But I think Talbot probably redeemed himself at the end of the game.
Totally. James Talbot is, to my mind, the best keeper in the league. And, you know, a lot of other clubs weren't in for him. But he has bought into the whole Bowles thing. He loves the club. And we missed him badly last year. We really did. He was another... Like, James, we all know, he's a bit of a mad joke.
A lunatic, I think, is a terminology.
But he's usually passionate, and I love that about him. And I think he's a brilliant communicator with his defence. Now, I'm sure the defence were communicating with him on Friday night, going, what the fuck was that, you mad cunt? You know, but
I think he was shouting at Casper at one stage.
Yeah.
I'd say poor Casper hasn't got a word of English yet. Maybe he does. I could be wrong there. But
I don't speak Finglish.
If he does speak a bit of English, he said he didn't understand what Talbot was saying, because I fucking didn't. But you do need that sort of, again, said it might not be constructive criticism, Talbot, but you need someone barking and saying, hold on, wake fucking up.
100%. And that's what we missed last year. I think James coming back to us is, and Devine even said himself, it's like a new signing, and it is. He's a brilliant keeper. Okay, he made a howler the other night, and when it was, you know, when you're watching it, you're kind of going, oh shit, I hope it doesn't really affect him now for the rest of the game, because there was still fucking 8 minutes left. Oh well, it turned out to be 13 minutes left with the injury time added on, and I hope his head's not gone. And he came from one cross and went over, and thankfully Paddy Kirk was knocked it away. But then he made a brilliant save right at the end. I mean, you were saying you were down the other end and you thought it was a goal because all the Cork fans celebrated. Yeah. But it was a brilliant save, that tight, that close, right on the line, and got his arms behind. There was no doubt that it hadn't crossed the line. So, you know, James Talbot will save us a lot more points than lose points for us this
Absolutely,
season.
Absolutely, yeah. It's one of those keepers, simple as supper, like when a striker runs in one-on-one with him.
You fancy him, yeah.
Really do fancy him, like, to get down. So I thought, on the other end of the spectrum, I thought Toby, I know he's only 19-year-old kid on loan from Celtic with Cork, I think I said it to you before here. It was like, you know, you have a game of five aside and that cunt that has the best shot on the pitch puts one straight at you.
Yeah.
And it's like, one of those where, you know, you step to the side, half put your hands out to pretend to save it, and you go, bollocks, you know, I thought it was going to get away, you know. You had absolutely zero interest in fucking saving it. That was very similar, I thought, to the second goal from
Flores. He caught it, but obviously it was central and dipped or whatever. But Flores, I love Flores. I really love Flores. I think even last season when we were shit, he was the one or two, one of the very few.
He looked like he gave a fuck,
exactly. And he stood up to be counted when we needed him. Even in that Shelburne game, he had an awful game, but he still kept running at the tackles. He looked like he cared. You know what I mean?
He's the only one that came over the fans at the end.
That's right.
And walked over and tried to talk to people and apologise, for those wankers.
He's a proper pro, and I think he's going to be very important for us this season. I say he's thrilled that with the setup, full time setup, the new players are coming in. I say he's thrilled now. We've gone, finally, I've got a decent club to play for. Like, you know what I mean?
He probably is a potential captain there.
Absolutely.
But I think Bucko's told now, he's obviously got a 3-year contract. But yeah. I mean, I think the likes of him and Paddy's left full, still quite young, 20. Yeah. I think Paddy's 24, 25, you know. They're the players that probably need to be stepping up now and fucking.
New voices in the dressing room.
Like,
yeah. Absolutely.
Paddy Palamoy and fucking, but time to step up and be yeah. a voice, you know. Yeah. Be the next Stetson, be the next Bucko.
Yeah, why not?
And fucking, why not take the bull by the horns and do it yourself as a Bowles man?
Absolutely.
And hopefully now we fucking, you know, as you said, we've got the league wrapped up.
Blow it up, left. Blow it up, yeah.
As you said, going on the bus down, we were hopeful. So, we would qualify for Europe. You know, you look around the league, on the way home, you're like, geez, how many are you going to win it by? Such is the nature of a football fan. But if you're not getting carried away, what's the point?
What's the point? Exactly. Yeah, but it's amazing. I only said to Alex there again the other day, it's amazing what a Bowles win does for your mood and your weekend. Like Friday night, the rest of the weekend, I was just walking around with a smile on my face and feeling good and positive about everything. Like, you know what I mean? It's amazing. And then, like, because we had so many fucking bad nights last year. Like, so many weekends ruined.
It was getting to the stage, obviously, particularly after the Shelbourne game, we were speaking on, touching on it there. That you were literally dreading going down to Dalymount.
Yeah, it was like.
Literally, it was a task and a fucking.
It was toxic. Like, there was that. What was the game? There was a game where it was one of Keith Long's probably last games, and it was horrible. We got beaten, and I ended up having a fucking row with Paul Duffy, the bleeding pitch side announcer. And, like, when I walked out, like, later on, I was going, what the fuck is wrong with you, Eric? Having rows with him. Now, in fairness, Paul started it.
He was a big Long.
Because I was defending Long. I've always defended Long. And I love Keith Long. Even to this day, Jordan, I love Keith Long. I think he did an amazing thing with very limited resources. And he was incredible. And I've met him a few times. And he's always been nothing but a gentleman, you know. And I wish him well. Apart from when he's playing against Bowles against, you know. Because inevitably, he will get a club. But I've always defended him. I always defended him. Even when we were going through shit last year, I defended him. Just basically, I thought you'd earned enough. You had enough credit in the bank to ride the wave. It wasn't to be. But Paul roared at me or something. You still defended him. You still defended him. And I just lost it and started fucking effing and being out. And there was other people going, what the fuck? Look at these two outfits having a go at each other. And now, in fairness to Paul, Paul's a gentleman. Like, we actually, just the Shelbourne match, the horrible cup match, he walked up to me and he shook my hand and he says, Eric, he says, passions were high that night. You know, he says, I didn't mean it. And I says, listen, I didn't mean it either. Like, and I'm, it's all good now. It's all good.
But that's how much this it means football us. Club means to us. Like, yeah. It does divide you, but at the end of the day, you know, when it does set us, we are all both.
Exactly. We're all the same.
Yeah.
We all want the same things.
So now it draws across the league. Can't probably take too much from the first round of fixtures.
No.
You know, but while we're there, we'll enjoy it while we can.
Absolutely. Like Derry look like probably the real threat to Rovers this season because of the squad and the resources they have, and they went 1-0 up against Pats. But then Pats have recruited well this season. You know, they brought in your man Mulroney, is that his name?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
like they've got some good players in, and your man Joe Redmond, to me, I think he's the best centre half in the league.
Yeah,
I'd heard he was going to Rovers. Delighted he didn't. But he's been
he's on the multi-year deal. Hopefully his next step is across to the UK. Cause
yeah,
he does look like a prominent prospect
yeah.
in the league.
And he got the goal in like the last minute or something for Pats to equalise. Dundalk and UCD. Apparently UCD were the better team.
I'm not surprised. I think it's a Dundalk failed to fill out that fixture against Shells in the Leinster Senior Cup. I heard it's Jude Morris. So lack of players now. We have heard that they are being taken over by a new owner, and they probably expecting a few loan signings this week.
From Hull?
Possibly from Hull, yeah.
Aaron Connolly.
Yeah. But hopefully now we can still catch them on the bounce. We'll talk about that match later. But
yeah.
I suppose Bowles 2 points clear at the table.
The
only team in the country with 100% record.
Isn't it amazing? It's beautiful. What sells them is beautiful, Jordan. You know, you got to enjoy these moments. And it was great. It's great. As you like. If someone had told you, like, I don't care that Cork were a new team or they've only just promoted. If somebody said to you, you're going down to Turner's Cross, first game of the season, you're coming away with 3 points, you fucking bite the hand off. And we did that, so we have to be delighted. Move on to the next one.
Exactly. So, look, we'll move on now past the Cork game, and I suppose as we did with our guests in the previous episodes, move on to yourself, Eric.
Yes.
And we'll go back to the 70s.
Oh, the 70s, yeah, that's how old we are.
Into the DeLorean with us. And, I suppose, how did you manage to get into the big club?
So my dad was a Bulls fan, and he used to bring me down. So we only just discovered that we lived not too far away from each other, Jordan. Like, I'm from Finglas South, and my dad used to walk the Daily Mount from Argaff. So we'd walk up by the cemetery and all that. And I always remember being young, so I was 5 or 6, and my dad just strode along. I mean, fucking having to run all the time because his long legs were just... And I tried to keep up and go, and my dad was deaf, so he couldn't even hear me when I was like, "Dad, dad, wait on us." So my earlier experiences were going to see Bowes and Daily Mount when, you know, Turlough O'Connor, I think, was managing then, but I wasn't really aware of the players at that stage. I was too young. I always remember it being fairly empty, rarely anyone there, kind of thing. Like, and the old Jody stand, before the new Jody stand was built, was just all wooden benches. I remember fucking the Bradford fire happened, and when that happened, I was going, that's exactly like the Bowes stand.
Probably would have been the same architect, actually.
Could have been, yeah. And I was thinking, geez, that could easily happen in Daily Mount, you know. But anyway, one abiding memory I have of those early years was the first time I ever saw a Park Jordan was Bowes were playing a UEFA Cup match in Daily Mount against the Geordies, Newcastle United. 76, 77 maybe that season. I stand to be corrected there. But it was nil all. And me and my dad used to always stand at the halfway line on the Connacht Street end. I always remember the Owens with our pram selling the apples and oranges and chocolate and all that. That's great. But it doesn't matter where you were. It doesn't matter how warm it was outside. Every time you got to that spot, it was minus 10 degrees. It was fucking Baltic. But that day, with that night, going to Daily Mount and seeing the place full, it was a real... I couldn't believe it. And I couldn't see because I was only 5. So my dad put me on his shoulders and I was looking out onto the pitch. And I was the match finished nil all, I think it was. I think they beat us 2-0 in St. James's Park in the return leg. But that was my first time seeing Daily Mount packed with rafters and going, wow, man, this is great. But over the years, Jordan, I'll be honest with you, like, you know, in your development as a human being going through adolescence up to teenage into adulthood, there's been periods where I stopped going to Bowes, you know, like for 2 years, 3 years, mm-hmm. whatever. You discover fucking different things in life.
Women.
Women.
Drink.
Drinking drugs, whatever. Whatever's going on out there. You discover and then you always find your way back. You always find your way back. And now I think this is probably, I think this block in my life supporting Bowes is the longest block, yeah. Uninterrupted block, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, you know, it's just been constant and I love it. I absolutely love it. I can't think of ever going on a break again and just saying, do you know what? I'm not going to go down to Bowes this season. I just don't, I have to. It's in me, like, you know what I mean? It's a passion I feel. And I thought it would probably dissipate a little bit when I got older, but now it just seems to be getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And I see the way the club's developing. I see the way the club has grown. And, like, nothing would make me happier than to see Bowes lift the trophy. It'd be just the icing on the cake. And I just want to be at that party, that celebration afterwards. Like, you know what I mean? That's I think we all share that dream kind of thing, like, you know?
As I said, I'm probably only got the Bowes regularly since 2010.
Yeah.
Which is still 14 years.
Yeah, it's a fucking stint.
It's a fucking stint. And
sentence.
Or being regularly, it's been, as I said, a block for me. You know, my outfit, my granddad would have brought me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
During my summer holidays, whatever like that. And, you know, again, teenage years, you fall out.
Of course.
The end of teenage years, I fell back into it. I haven't really looked back since. But, so I've never seen Bowes win sweet fuck all in my years. So,
I hope the Bowes players are listening to this. Hey, Jordan, he hasn't seen his lift one bit of silverware. It's on you to lift that bit of silverware this year. Jordan.
But I don't think I'm the only one in that sort of block. But as you said, you've got a lot of friends that would have went, you know, probably they got to the late teenage years and they've been very few games since, you know.
Yeah.
They just discover other things, what you want to do.
Yeah.
Try to get your rock and roll on a Friday night.
Yeah.
I watch Bowes get beaten by used to the Benfield Bowes. And
some people love the misery, though. Some people love the misery.
That's where we're both sitting here on Monday night.
Jesus, beat you now. It's a beat you around like 2010. Because like 2 years prior to that, we won the double.
No, no.
Isn't that mad?
I think I would have been watching it on the telly as a sort of, you know, any of the games that were up, I'll stick that on.
Yeah.
But I wasn't doing anything else.
Yeah. Oh man, what a season that was.
Yeah, so I joined the Bowes party when all the drugs were gone, more or less. But then obviously you said the late 70s there, but I suppose going into the early 80s would have been not much greater for Bowes.
No, like the 80s were the barren, it was a barren decade for Bowes. I think like at the very start of it, like the 82 and 83, we got the 2 cup finals in a row. We were beaten by Limerick and we were beaten by Sligo Rovers. And that was heartbreaking for me because I hadn't, like we had won the league and I think it was 76 or 78, but it wasn't aware of it. I was too young, you know what I mean? But when I started getting to 12 and 13, 82, 83, I'm looking at Bowes in the cup final and going, oh my God, we're in the cup final. It's live on the telly. Bowes are on the telly. Like, what the fuck? And both matches were in Daily Mount. And we lost both games. We've beaten 1-0 by Limerick. I've beaten 2-1 by Sligo. And I'll never forget it, being so heartbroken about it. Even like one, I don't know which one of those years it was, but I was at the semi-final, Bowes and Dundalk. And I was talking to you before this, and what a fucking series. Like, everyone remembers them Dublin Mead replays in the Ga years ago, like 3 or 4 replays. This was very similar. It was an FAI Cup semi-final. I think the first match finished 3-3. Second match finished 1-1. Third match finished 0-0. And they went to a third replay. So the fourth match was in fucking Tolka Park. And Bowes and Dundalk. There was no fucking segregation or anything like that. Murder. Like,
your fans didn't swap ends at half-time, didn't they?
Yeah. It was like absolute bedlam. So they'd be crossing each other. And there was running battles in the Riverside Stand with fucking sticks and hammers and everything. I mean, that was like, right, well, let's go.
And we went down. Dundalk would have been a rough town back in the, back in the 80s as well. Very fucking rough town.
We went down behind the goal. And it was 1-1 and went into extra time. Of course it did. It was the fucking third replay. And I always remember, like, one of the greatest moments of my, one of the greatest memories I have is John Rayner, who was only a new Bowes player. He came up from one of the underage teams, and he came off the bench and stuck one into the top corner from about 25, 30 yards out. And it was like about a minute to go in extra time. And Bowes won 2-1, qualified for the cup final. And it was just limbs, bedlam. Absolute bad, and Bowes fans going absolutely ballistic. But so there's I'd love to have loads of them moments to report, Jordan, but no, we're Bowes fans. We have those moments are few and far between, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, you know,
absolutely. But eventually, that barren spell probably did come to an end.
Yeah,
92
Lansdowne Road, the old Lansdowne Road as well. Like, you know, and Dave Tilson getting that winner against Cork was like, that was such a moment, because, as I said, like, all them years, that was the first kind of big trophy I remember us winning and being able to feel really ecstatic and celebrate, like, you know. And Dave Tilson, of course, used to play for the same schoolboy club that I played for, Cambridge Boys, down at Ring's End. Now, I know you're all probably listening to this going, what's the thing this kid down playing for a Ring's End team? The long story, I'll tell you another time. We might talk about it later,
Jordan. We'll talk about it later on, yes.
But, winning that cup in 92 was incredible. And then I started getting really into it again, and I went through a big block again, and then tailed off again. I said, I started having kids then as well, like, you know, and you have your responsibilities, and when you have twins as well, you're not getting out any fucking where, like, you know what I mean. So I suffered because of that, but the love for Bowes never died.
Yeah, and I suppose just before that as well, I think the 92 final, we played St Francis in the semi final.
Oh, Jesus Christ, in Tolka.
Yeah,
and we got beaten 1-0. Yeah, no, I was there because we all thought this will just be a celebration, getting to the cup final, and Bray were in the final, and we were thinking, we've got France in the semis and Bray in the final, fucking the cup's ours. Mm-hmm. It was just diabolical.
I suppose you probably feel that you probably left a lot of trophies behind back then as a Bowes fan.
Usually so, like, I mean, there's been times even when we were challenging for the league. Like, do you remember that famous incident where Bowes went up to Dundalk and they needed a draw to win the league? And the bus broke down on the way, and the players had to get chains on the bus, get off the bus, and run out onto the fucking pitch, do a little bit of stretching, and then the match kicks off.
And Doc got a corner that wasn't a corner.
Yeah, and they beat us 1-0, and we lost the league. And when it went to that fucking ridiculous triangular three-team playoff or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, we would have won the league by goal difference, but whatever way they walked that year.
Oh, yeah. There was just a playoff.
It was just a playoff.
A three-team playoff.
Despite Bowes hasn't been miles ahead, I don't think. Yeah, 3-team playoff. Bowes went down to Cork. I think it wasn't got beaten.
Yeah, it was like a conspiracy. We Bowes must not win anything at all costs. That's what it was. And it still feels like that.
Absolutely, yeah. Look who you're talking to. As well, as I said, you disappeared, and the great man came in maybe 2000, 98, 99, 2000.
The Rodster.
Roddy,
I've been fortunate enough, I suppose, recently to do a couple of work things with Roddy. For Joe.ie, you know, and he's such a character. I bought his book, his audio book.
I was proud of the audio book to get for my next long haul flight.
Yeah, that's because I'm driving all around the country doing gigs and whatever, so it's great to have something to listen to, like a podcast or an audio book. And you said
radio was dead these days, isn't it?
yeah, it's dead.
Mr. Gallagher, it's fucking dead.
Pardon PJ Show, it's the only show that's working. But yeah, and just and Roddy's doing the, he's reading it, it's his voice, you know. So I felt like for a long time, like I was doing 3 or 4 shows in a row, so I was driving all around the country and staying each night in whatever town. But the drive was such a pleasure because I listened to Roddy telling all these stories in his mad voice, like, you know, and all that. And it felt like, I actually texted him going, I've been listening to you for the last 12 hours over the last 4 or 5 days, and I feel like you've been on this journey with me. Like, you know, well, next time I go, I'll come with you, and I will be on the journey with you. You know? He's a gas man, Roddy. He's a... I think, you know, he's another one that divides people.
Yeah.
Because he's very outspoken.
There's people at Bowes who have him in charge ahead of the Divoid at the moment.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. And I think given half a chance, he'd jump at it as well.
I don't think that's up for debate. I think he ruled himself out of the job at the end of the season and said, no, I'm not interested in this.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Let's call it spade a spade.
But didn't he write an article there recently where he was saying that, oh, Bowes look like they're finally getting their house in order, that it's not just off the field activities. It looks like they're sorting the football team.
Yeah, the director of football, I know. Yeah. Where did the money come from?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have to fucking tell them wound up a season. Do you recall much of that?
Yeah, I mean, there was a moment... in one of the games, what's your man's name, the striker? Nesevic, is that his name?
Nesevic, yeah.
There was a late goal he got in a game, I think it was against Pats at Dalymount. And it was an equaliser or a winner, I don't know what it was, but it just, when it happened, there was a massive outpouring of emotion and fucking, like, and a realisation then that, holy fuck, we might win the league here. We might win the league here, like, you know. And
first time in 24 years or something like that, wasn't it? Would have been that long?
Yeah, it would have been. It was such a... Because we've so many years of heartbreak, so many years of nearly... So many years of being the fucking bridesmaids. And then to go on that run and playing brilliant football. Like they were so entertaining to watch, Bowes. Like, you know, like, they had so many brilliant players. I was lucky enough to play in that Lynn O'Neill testimonial with a lot of them there recently at Dalymount. Yeah. And... so fucking weird to be in a dressing room with these like absolute Bowes legends, like, you know what I mean? But just an unbelievable feeling. Like down in Kilkenny that day, we won, what was it, 6-1, 5-1, whatever.
Yeah,
hammered them,
I think it was, yeah.
And waiting on the word from Talca Park, and Cork had beaten Shelbourne, and the whistle, when everyone's waiting, and then the word got through, and just absolutely.
Of course, it would have been lads on old mobile phones,
yeah,
back then.
The big massive Nokias and all, yeah. People on pay phones and all ringing their mas and all.
Yeah, you can only imagine then, no live score, you know.
Oh, stop.
10 people huddled around the phone waiting for a word to come through.
Mad scenes, absolute bedlam. Brilliant, though. And, you know, we've had patches then where looks like we're coming back again, and we've had the like we talked about it there earlier on, like 2008. On the Pat Fennin winning the cup final at Derry, at the RDS against Derry, and that was a magical day. And that was, like, I mentioned Alex, I keep mentioning Alex, but that was one of his first real memories of Bowes. He was only like 5 or 6 at the time, but he always remembers being brought to the big stadium with the big crowd, because he wasn't even used to seeing big crowds at Bowes matches either. Yeah. Like, you know, like full stadium. One thing that I always remember about that cup final, Jordan, always makes me laugh, was the you know, we had already tied in with Johnny Logan at that stage. So Johnny Logan came up onto the pitch and sang "Homie Now." We walked out to the Bowes fans in our stand, and we were all rascars singing it. And like, Derry had fucking the Undertones, you know, and they came out and it looked so, the difference in the style of music. They had Teenage Kicks and the Derry fans all belted. We had "Homie Now." Such a fucking contrast, but it was amazing, and it was one of those great memories that you bring to your grave. What a day! And I remember driving home from the RDS, and the streets were swarming with Bowes fans, and just fucking beeping the horn the whole way down the road, like, and everyone. It was fucking amazing, amazing. I love the fact that when we won it, we went up to the Bowes players went up to where all the commentators were. To wave at them, because they'd been written off about doing the double that year, and they'd obviously won the double, so yeah. They just wanted to give two fingers to the pundits who were running them off the whole time, like, you know. It was brilliant.
And of course then the wheels came off not so long later.
Christ, yeah, when we were looking into the abyss.
Looking into the abyss. What was it like? I suppose I would have caught the 2010 sort of, but I wouldn't really have understood it was only 15. Was only sort of getting into this great thing of Bowes, and people are telling me this is actually going to be gone now.
Yeah. You're a jinx, Jordan. Everything was going so well. No, obviously the collapse of the property deal affected us badly. We were spending money we didn't have, but we thought we were going to have. Was it Albion? Albion Investments or whatever it was. But yeah, it all fell apart, and it looked like we were going to the wall. And like, I was like, oh my God, man, this can't happen. This can't happen. And it was then when I think I started become, for want of a better fucking phrase, an activist for bowels, if you will. And I was going, well, I need to do something here. There has to be something I can do here. Like, you know, using whatever little platform that I had, I was only after getting into comedy at that stage. And I was like 4 or 5 years under my belt or something like that. But I'd established a bit of a reputation, knew all the comedians. And I don't know who I approached at bowels, and said, look, I can do something. I can put on a fucking gig. I think the first gig we did was in the Olympia.
It was a Save Our Bowls gig, was it?
Yeah, Save Our Bowls gig. And I booked a couple of comedians, and it was sold out, fucking flags hanging over. You know, the Olympia, it's a beautiful venue with flags hanging over the barriers and all that. It was beautiful. And a huge successful night. And we made a lot of money for bowls, particularly when they were like broke and owed so much money. And that helped. And then we put on another, I think it was in those years, in those 2 or 3 years afterwards, we put on 2 or 3 of them. Like, 2 of them were in the Olympia, 1 of them was in Vicar Street. But they were comedy gigs, and then we'd find somebody like Blush Shields or someone else to come along and sing a song as well, just to give it a bit of variety. But that really struck a chord with me that time, because I was like, oh my God, this is, I can't bear the thought of not, bowls not existing.
Having a Bohemian Athletic reappearing out of the abyss.
You know what I mean? Or like, you know, or them having to go down to the Leinster Senior League and you know, restart again.
But there was meetings about that during the time. Yeah. There was plenty of meetings about restarting, how we're going to, where do we go? Like, did we go into the Leinster Senior League as an amateur club, work our way up? How the fuck, who would you get to show up and where do you even play? Like,
I know, go back to the Phoenix Park, I suppose. You know?
many Bowls fans would genuinely have showed up to a Phoenix Park to see Bohemian Athletic play fucking St. Kevin's Boys. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's mad to think that was
how close we were.
It wasn't even a possibility; it was a probability.
Oh, totally. Like, a lot of us had, like, well, not me. I always kind of, I'm not saying, oh, I knew. I'm not saying that, but I never fully believed that we go out of existence. I always thought there has to be something that we can do here, and that little gesture of putting on a gig was one of many gestures that a lot of people did at the time, which ultimately saved the club, you know?
It was probably a time when the club maybe really hit home when this is a members own club.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't, you know, the lads and the fans, the men on the board and the just an arm fucking Joseph fan.
Yeah.
The lads on the board are now fans of people we personally know.
This is it, yeah.
And we probably wouldn't have been seeing us back then. They were probably looked at as nearly corporate.
Yeah. And there was that, like, chasm between the fans and the board at the time. Like, you know, as you said, you're kind of looking at them going, they don't feel like they're part of us. We don't feel like they're part of them. But it's all changed now. It's a fucking, the Bowes board now, they're all lunatics.
Most definitely, yeah. And you said you were integral in putting on sort of those shows, and obviously even my recent shows over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. I actually did one for Dundalk as well, would you believe? So I feel kind of...
Smoking yourself out.
No, well,
I'll get a stand-up night out of these cunts.
One of the comedians that I booked, it was a Dundalk fan who did the Bowes gig. And so he, you know, returned the favour kind of thing. And Dundalk were going through financial trouble there. Remember, they were in the first division and all that. And they nearly went to the wall as well. And we had a big gig up in the Crown Plaza up in Dundalk there. And it was myself, Ardlo Hannon, and a couple of others. And... we again raised a lot of money, stopped them from going to the abyss again, kind of thing. So
Ardle, he's from that way. He's from
Ardle's from Monaghan.
Monaghan, is he?
But he said because he lived most of his life in Dublin, Bowes were always his kind of club, like, you know. He's a massive Leeds United fan though. He's a Leeds ultra, but he always has a soft spot for Bowes and has been down to Daily Mount a few times over the years, like, you know. But I love Ardle. He's a football nut. Great man.
So despite this, Eric, now, you've actually never been to Bowes in Europe.
I know, yeah.
We gotten over that period of the successful times.
Yeah.
And you actually never got to go away.
No, people listen to this going, he's not a real Bowes fan. And yeah, probably, you're probably right. If I haven't been to an away game in Europe. But it's definitely on the bucket list. Obviously, you know, when we qualified for Europe, COVID happened. And, you know, we got knocked out in Hungary. Remember on penalties?
That's right,
it was fucking devastating. And then we got to Europe and...
That ended up with a few of us on a 2-page spread in the Sun.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell us more, Jordan. I want to hear.
Was this
flouting COVID rules in a pub?
Oh wow! Oh yeah, Hannah's Corner.
That's correct.
Ah,
yeah.
That's the one. Yeah, that was famous. Brilliant. Loved that hardcore. But
fucked out onto the street, and we're all watching it on our phones, walking down the road, trying to find the next port to call.
That's the other pubs breaking the rules around here. But yeah, just and then obviously that the brilliant run in Europe with the three games in the Aviva, and yous all mad fuckers went out to Greece for the power game, and he weren't allowed into the stadium, but he's it looked like he's had some party in the hotel anyway, in the pill.
Ah, yeah, it was a fantastic day. Yeah,
the balls take over.
There was little small packs of fans that did make it into the stadium, but even now I sort of look back and could you give me a ticket to go to the stadium? I probably wouldn't have went.
Really?
Because I got into their ground, fucking it was nervy as it was. Like, yeah. The second people got off the plane, they were being accosted straight onto fucking police escort.
Oh, really, yeah?
And
because they're hardcore, them power fans, aren't they?
Yeah, they're acting like a couple of lads got flags robbed, which is par for the course.
Yeah.
Of course, in European games.
Well, I'd love to do it, though, John. I can't. That's why, you know, hopefully we get a top four this season or win a cup or whatever and we qualify for Europe, because it's definitely on the bucket list. I have to do it.
Yeah, I love doing it. It was probably the greatest trip I've ever been on. It's just the unity with them boys, you know, really cement, you know, people you would have never talked to.
Yeah.
And you're just. No, you start talking about
But that's you just touched on it there, Jordan. Like that's the thing about Bowes. Like over the years, like I see so many familiar faces, and a lot of them I still don't know their name. You know, but you just see them, and it's like a little warm hug. It's a friendly face. You go, all right, there you are, all right, and that's it. That's all you say, and that's it. Like, and I still don't know their names.
So that was your sort of bit of a summary of your time supporting Bowes.
Yeah, yeah. Is a lot of heartbreak, but some amazing, amazing days and nights as well.
But I do believe you did say that you could have been a footballer. Well, you all could have been footballers, of course. But you played for a team in Ringsend, but you actually had a trial for Bowes.
Yeah, well, no. What happened was I played schoolboy football, young schoolboy football, from the age of 8 till about 11, no, 9 to 12. I was playing down in Ringsend from Finglas. What happened was, one of our neighbours around the corner was from Finglas. He's from the South Lots Road. And there wasn't really any teams. Rivermount hadn't even been formed at this time. That's how long ago it was. And I was looking to play for a football team. And a few of us were. So there was about a gang of 6 or 7 kids from my estate who used to get 2 buses to Ringsend Park, train twice a week and play a match at the weekend. All under. And I remember the first league we were in was the South Dublin League, playing with Cambridge boys. And then he put us in as an under 11 team in an under 12 in the DDSL in an under 12. It was like 12C or 12D or something, but we won the league, so we were able to play 12s again. We were put up into the A league, so we were playing against the likes of Stella and Home Farm and Kevin's and all that, and I was doing all right for them, and Stella then asked me to sign for them, and Stella were like fucking the top team in the league, so I was delighted, like, you know. And I went down, and it was me and an old League of Ireland pro, used to play football. We used to play up front together. Vinnie Atkins was his name. Me and Vinnie Atkins were the 2 strikers for Stella Maris, and we won everything. It was a battle between us and Cherry Orchard. Cherry Orchard won a cup, and we'd win the league. They'd win the league. We'd win the cup, and we'd always play each other in the final and all that. And then at the end, when I got to 18s, I was offered trials with Bowes, Rovers, Pats, Shells, the Works, because it was one of them things. Like when you're with Stella at Home Farm, and you get to the end. They go, where have you to go now? You know, you're going into men's football now. So the League of Ireland clubs obviously went to the top clubs in the DDSL and went, do any of our players want to trial, basically? That was it. It wasn't like,
it wasn't.
They targeted me, they made an offer, or like that, like, you know. But I just remembered at the time, like I mentioned it there, was one of the blocks where I just went, ah, no, you're grand. I didn't fancy trying really hard. I was a bit of a lazy fucker, like, you know. Still am, I suppose.
Yeah, and you had touched on that there, that was onto your son. He did say you did fancy yourself a bit as a footballer. He said, could you ask him about the time in charity game in a packed Richmond?
Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was Richmond Park. It was a radio. It was like a Pat's All-Stars against a fucking celebrity team, apparently. And I got roped into it anyway. And we were playing at Richmond. Good crowd and all. And I hadn't been training much, obviously. So I hadn't been playing ball much. But I did score in the game. I will say that now. I did score in the game. But there was a moment where the ball was launched over and I ran. And I thought, fucking hell, Eric, you still have it. You fucking still have it. And then, like, my legs just buckled underneath. Like, just buckled and just fucking face planted the ground. I got up with muck all over my face. and looked around, and Alex and I think my daughter was there, and a couple of my mates were fucking on the ground in ribbons, laughing their heads off. Like, you know, Paul McGrath, I was playing, like, it was fucking such a fucking an honour to be playing against these lads, kind of thing. Like, Pat Fennan was playing as well, and he was I scored a penalty. It was a penalty given to us, and they let me take it. I always remember Pat Fennan in my ear trying to put me off, but I still scored it. Like, you know, but yeah, that was cheers, Alex. Thanks for that.
Yeah, and just touching there on your daughter. What's her name?
Jody.
Was she named after the Jody stand? Because your son has told me that you're going to call her him, Des, and her Jody.
No, my daughter is, she's Jody's what, 27, 28. And she came into the world. Me missus picked the name, right? She said, I think I like Jody. And I went, I love it. I think it's a great name. I didn't mention, my missus wasn't even aware there was a stand called Jody. And then she chose to spell it J-O-D-I without the E. Most people I know was going, that's all right. I have no issue with that at all. But Jody now, to this, because you know all the merchandise that comes out now and you still have the Jody, there's like Jody on it. Jody, my daughter Jody has seen this recently. She's going, what's the fucking story with all the Jody stuff? And it says, you know, we used to have we were sponsored by a clothing manufacturing company by Tony O'Connell, and they were called Jody. And she stopped and she goes, did you name me after a stand in Daily Mount? And I said, you're lucky you're not called fucking Shed. You know? But she knows. Look, it was your mat. It was just one of those beautiful coincidences, like, kind of thing, like, you know.
And I do want to ask you, what are you going to call the dog?
Oh, that's right, yeah. Like, we have a little dachshund, and his name is Louis. But when we got him, guard his little pup, and I straight away turned to Alex and says, we're calling him Detta. And Alex, of course, going, yeah, fuck a daddy. And actually, I remember putting up a post on social media going, welcome to our new member of the family, little Detta. I don't know, the like Bowers players now going, fucking brilliant, the fucking nice one. And then the missus and the rest of the family, we got democratically overruled, basically, Jordan. They just said, you can't call him Detta. Like, he's a beautiful little thing. He's not a Detta. He's a beautiful little thing.
So he's a Detta, but they like to hear that.
Yeah. He's care. But I mean, he's still, like, Louis reminds me so much of Detta because he snaps at everyone and he's biting at their ankles and all that kind of thing. So Detta would have been the perfect name for him, like, you know.
You said, you know, you never really got away with balls in the way match, but said you have a habit of ruining every holiday.
I have a habit of ruining every holiday.
You said you dived into a pool one time.
Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah, that was... It was before the twins were born, and we went to Salou. I used to do a big routine about it in my stand-up, and you know when you're sitting at the pool and you're fucking down in the San Miguel's and the Corona's, someone's beamed, like, oh, this is fucking great, and pool is packed full of people, and I just said, fuck this, jumped off the stool, ran to the edge of the pool, launched myself skywards, like, you know, and went through the water very quickly, bang, head. And I dived into the fucking shallow end of the pool. Like, oh, I thought, the deep end, right? I dived into the shallow. And I remember my head smacking so hard against the ground. I got up. And my missus was in the pool with Darren and Jody. They were only little kids at the time. And my missus started screaming. And I'm going, what's wrong with you? Relax, I'm grand. She goes, you're not fucking grand. Because, you know, when you have water, you don't feel blood.
Yeah.
It's about liquids. It's just, yeah. So I just thought it was water. But there was just blood pumping. It was like a fucking horror scene. Blood. But my head had opened up right there in the middle. I ended up getting to a medical centre. And I got 12 stitches. And for the rest of the holiday, I couldn't get into the pool. I go under the water, like, you know, fucking horrible. Like, you know, you get into it up to your chest and all that, but it was still horrible. Like, you know, doctor says to me, you were so lucky you didn't break your neck, I felt the creak in my neck down for a couple of days afterwards, but yeah, that was it. Like, I went on holidays and nearly ruined the holiday on everyone. But I was actually, when you mentioned it, I always remember the fella, the doctor in the medical center, was a Dutch lad, right? And when I walked in, I told him what happened, whatever, and he goes, by the way, are you English or are you Irish? I says, I'm Irish. Ah, in that case, you can have an anaesthetic. And that was it. So even he knew the difference. Like, you know,
Paddy cared. Yeah, and to drinking incidents there. Now, you don't know I've come up with this.
I know, yeah. I'm going, what the fuck else has he told you?
So normally we have to handle your drink. So you're quite good at it.
Oh, no.
So last year you had a few too many.
I know what he's getting.
And you went wandering in the gaff.
Yeah, you see, my eldest young man, Darren, right, he works in he's the general manager for the Celtic Whiskey Shop in Dawson Street, so he's access to a lot of whiskey. There's a lot of whiskey in the gaff, you know. And
I used to order a lot of Brazilian cachaça as gifts to women over there, over that shop.
Oh, the Celtic Whiskey Shop? Yeah. Brazilian cachaça, what is it?
Cachaça it is, it's a Brazilian drink. So next time I'm looking for a few bottles of next Brazilian, I'll get them.
Well, go in, look after you. He will, darling. Jordan will be into you soon, right, for some Brazilian cachaça, whatever it's called, and look after him. But yeah, so whiskey makes me go mental, Jordan, right? And, you know, makes me a little, sometimes I sleepwalk. And last year I get into bed and it's all good, whatever, and then lo and behold, an hour or so later, I got up to go to the toilet, and obviously I don't remember this, but I walked up to the attic where Adam and Alex are, the twins are, and just got into bed beside Adam, and Adam turned around and was going, "The fuck are you doing that?" He says to me, I just looked down and went, "Sorry, shh, sorry, sorry." I just pulled the duvet over me and just lay on the pillow, and Alex got up and went, "What's Dad doing in your bed?" And Adam goes, "I don't fucking know." And then I heard a commotion, and Alex got up and put the light on, and I stood up in my jocks and looked at the two of them and went, "All right, sorry about that," and just went back down into my bed. But I woke up the next morning and forgotten all about it. Do you know what I mean? So I was sitting down having a cup of tea with the missus, and Adam walks down and he goes, "What's the fucking story with you last night, Dad?" I went, "What do you mean?" And then he said, "Do you not remember getting into bed?" And then when he said it, it came flooding back. I went, "Oh my God almighty. Where am I?" Oh man, it was just, yeah. So sleepwalk. When I get whiskey, mad shit happens. There's another story I would like to tell, but I don't want to fucking defame anyone. But it was, oh no, I won't. I'll say for another podcast. I'll say for another podcast. Yeah.
Sorry, we'll touch back here on your comedy days and yourself, and obviously a bit more famous now than he was a couple of years ago, Mr. Will Alwee.
Ah, Will Alwee.
Went down to Athlone.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Like, you know, when you talk about things that go wrong or whatever. Me and Will, I started comedy together. We were in that fucking Des Bishop's Joy in the Hood back in the day, you know. That's how the two of us got into comedy. We never knew each other before that show, but we become fucking really close, really good buddies, you know, ever since. And I used to have this old routine years ago about the birth of Jodie, actually, because she was born in the gaff in Ballymun. It was a home birth. And I used to have this big routine with the whole day and how it transpired and everyone coming into the gaff, and the gaff was packed, and it was like a fucking Roddy Doyle novel, you know. It was like a gaff and popping tree. I remember actually, even on that day, it was a glorious hot sunny day, June 15th, and a bloke on a horse outside the gate going, "And you knew it?" Because they all knew that the baby was getting born that day in the house at whatever stage, and there was neighbours coming in every time. But anyway, at the end of that, there was a moment, when I'm doing the routine, there's a moment where we switch to the bedroom. And it's me and my missus, my ma's there, her ma's there, and her sister's there, and the midwife. And up to that point, the missus had been so graceful, so serene. And this is, and then something changed. And in the queue for the stand-up, I go, a dark, dark atmosphere came over that room. And that's the cue for the sound engineer to play Tubular Bells by Mike Oldfield. And do from the Exorcist. And because then I launch into it, my wife going into devil mode, go, "Get this fucking thing out of me," you know, this kind of thing. But so it was a really popular routine. It used to do really well. But we're doing this gig, me and Will are down in Athlone for the Scuba Divers Association of Ireland, ironically, in Athlone, like, you know. And so Will was my sound engineer that night. So I was getting up and I was doing, the gig was going great. And so that was my big finish, like, you know. And then the queue comes along and I go, and a dark, dark atmosphere came over that room. And I look over and Will presses play. And instead of fucking Mike Oldfield, Tubular Bells, what comes out is, "I don't feel like dancing tonight." You know the fucking song with the Scissor Sisters. I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm looking over at Will and Will's panicking, going, "I don't know what the fuck, man. I don't know what the fuck." And I'm looking at the audience staring at me going, "What the fuck is this all about? What's that got to do with that?" Like, you know what I mean? And all I could think of on the spot was, well, now in fairness, she was in full labour. She didn't feel like dancing at all tonight, you know. Thank you very much, folks. Good night, God bless. And off I went, like, to like real this, what the fuck was that all about at the end? And I went over to Will, I going, "You fucking bastard." I was convinced he had sabotaged me, you know. And to this day, he'll probably listen to this now and he'll go, and he'd be breaking his bollocks laughing. And he says, "I never stopped laughing at how angry you got at me that day." And even for the following weeks going, you fucking nailed me. You sabotaged me. But to this day, he promises on his kids and all that he had nothing to do with it. It was just one of them weird things that it just went wrong. But we got over. It wasn't too bad.
And suppose you done a bit of a gig for the FAI, I think, was it?
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I think, like, one of my biggest idols in football, I thought, do you have an English name? Oh, no, you have a Welsh name. You're a Wrexham man. Welsh team, yeah. I think we're all Wrexham fans there after watching that documentary. Like, it was fucking amazing. I loved it.
It's very well done, isn't it?
Obviously
done with the Hollywood star, but
it's
like, we all know what happened, but they didn't get promoted. Like,
yeah.
But you're still waiting to see where
it's
going next.
I got to the point where I was going, actually, did they? Maybe they did. Maybe they actually
did. Always happy end of the business. Yeah, yeah.
But it's amazing. And I love that, like, there's something about Wrexham and Bowes. I can see similarities in the way it's community driven. And, you know, it's anyway. But what are we talking about there? Oh, yeah. What was it?
The FAO.
Oh, yeah, my biggest, like, so my other team, I suppose, my following English football would be Man United, right? And Roy Keane, obviously, was, like, the best, still to this day, the best Man United player I've ever seen, probably the best Irish player I've ever seen. Just the fact that the influence and the dominance he had in games, and because he was notoriously a cranky cunt as well, like, you know. But anyway, I was booked to do the Irish Soccer Writer Awards a few years ago, big black toy event in the Conrad Hotel, I think it was. And so all the Bowers had a presence there, all the League of Ireland clubs had presence, and Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane were the managers of Ireland at the time, so they were there, and they were sat in the fucking front row. So he went up, and the first words out of my mouth was, before they start this gig, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to point out this man sitting here, Roy Keane, is my biggest football hero of all time, and I just want to say, ask Roy, in front of everybody here, is it okay, me and you have a selfie? And of course he went, no. And I knew he'd say that anyway. But when he said no, the fucking the pressure valve released, the whole place erupted and laughed and breaking up all that stuff. And I took off and I did half an hour and the gig was going brilliantly. And I remember glancing down a couple of times and seeing Roy laughing. And then to myself going, I'm fucking making Roy Keane laugh here. I don't fucking believe this.
Most miserable man of the planet.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm making him laugh. And the gig was over, it was delighted, you know, it went really well. And as I'm walking down off the stage, Keane leans back in his chair and just grabs me by the arm. And he goes, what's he say? He says, you're a funny man, like. He says, enjoy that. He says, now, he says, of course you can have that selfie, but not here. We'll do it out in the lobby because every cunt will be asking me where I'm from. I says, yeah. Oh, what a right. So me and Roy snuck out to the lobby and we got a photograph. And I still have it to this day. And yeah, it's one of me treasured selfies with a celebrity fucking star, whoever you want to call it, like, you know.
Yeah, excellent. And I suppose your road is a bit full of footballers. I think Jason Sherlock,
yeah.
Across the road from
me.
And good pal of mine, he was
Barry O'Sullivan, actually, is there's a fella, he's really old now, but he played for Bowes in the 70s, a fella called Barry O'Sullivan. He still lives there. And he was on that League of Ireland team that played against Pele at Dalymount in 74, I think it was. I think it was a League of Ireland selection against Santos. And play. So my neighbour across the road.
Bowes and drums.
Was that a combo? So Barry O'Sullivan was a striker for Bowes, and he played against Pele, and he was one of my neighbours as well. And I used to love him. When we were kids playing football out in the street, he'd come out and all that, and we'd go, you used to play with Bowes, didn't you? Yeah, and we'd ask him all the questions. I'd say he fucking hated us though, you know. But yeah, Jason Sherlock was on the road as well.
And
Jason,
a pal of mine was a couple of doors down from you. Mr. Paul Butler was here.
Butty.
Talking about winning the league, Butty, yeah.
Ah, jeez, yeah. I used to babysit Paul, would you believe, all them years ago when Paul was only like, whatever, 4 or 5 or whatever. And his mum and dad would be going out on a Sunday. Usually a Sunday night it was. I go down and watch him at the league at home and babysit. But like, I was into football, and Butty obviously at that stage was already getting into football. And we'd be in the sitting room, and I'd have a tennis ball or a little plastic football bouncer off the wall, and I'd head it towards the couch, and he'd be on the couch diving to save it, because he fancied himself as a bit of a keeper back then, as a young fella growing up, like, you know. But but he's a staunch Bohemian now, isn't he?
Yeah, he was one of those sort of fellow balls.
Yeah, Stephen Ruddy's another fellow off the road as well.
See, from that direction,
yeah, he's
I know he's living up around this neck of the woods somewhere now. But
well, he was on our road as well. Another Bohemian.
Staunch area for a while, isn't it?
Yeah.
Finger south, suppose it's near the border, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Your favourite moment, Sporting Boss?
Wow, fucking hell. There was a moment, like, the freshest memory I have is Ali Coote's goal against Pauk when we went 2-0 up. Just that moment of almost disbelief and euphoria. And I remember I was standing beside PJ, And it's so bizarre. There was somebody else. We found on social media a video of a bloke filming the reaction of his mate going ballistic. But in the background, you can see me and PJ. And as the goal goes in, for whatever reason, I just sprint about 100 yards down the terrace like that. Oh, fuck. And PJ's like that with his hands on his head going like, as, like, what's just fucking happened? What's just fucking happened?
Yeah, I think my tears went as well when we went turning up.
Oh, my God. It was like, is this really happening? I couldn't believe, because we all going in going, Pauk are worth this, these players worth 10 million, 15 million.
Just try keep it respectable.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Let's not make a show of ourselves. Kagawa was playing with him, like, you know, and he wasn't that long gone from United, like, you know. And you're kind of going, holy fuck, we're 2-0 up against this. This is mental. So that is the freshest memory I have, Jordan. That Dave Tilson goal against Cork in 92, the cup final, was euphoric because it was the first time I kind of really believed and understood us winning a major trophy, like, you know. Dundalk, we're playing Dundalk on Friday, right? I was telling you, Jordan, I'm going to go down to the match, but I might have to leave a bit early because I'm in the laughter lounge, all right? So that's the nature of my job. But the last time that happened, right, was three, four seasons ago, we were playing Shelbourne in the cup, and I follow a lot of the Bows players, and a lot of them follow me as well. So I'll interact with them, like, you know. So I put up a story that day saying, I'm on the laughter lounge tonight. If any of the Bows players are watching, I have to leave at about 10 minutes, 15 minutes to go. Could you make it comfortable at that stage so I'm not fucking worried? Shelbourne go 1-0 up. And then the 82nd minute, they go 2-0 up. And I'm like, fuck this. And I'm out. I leave. And
no, I don't think you're the only one out the door, are you? There's a few souls gone by that stage.
I get to the car. Alex, 2-1. I was like, okay, right, cool. And driving down past the matter. 2-all. I was like, oh, no way. Nearly they're going to do a fucking handbrake and a Yui back up. I had to get to the gig. And I just arrived at the lounge, got out of the car, and I'm like, 3-2. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I missed that. But obviously delighted as well. Like, you know, Mandra got 2, I think, that day. So
2?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm at a place for Lincoln. But I'm hoping Friday coming, I will have to leave a bit early again, but I'm hoping it'll be 2-0 for us and I'm not worrying and stressing about it and not feeling bad about leaving a bit early, like, you know.
Absolutely. I suppose you mentioned a couple of players there. I suppose Mandrew won't make it into your favourite player.
No, as talented as he was, you know, Danny, look, let's be honest, if you put your Bowers and Rovers rivalries aside, he's a fucking incredibly gifted footballer.
No.
Glides across the surface, and one of my favourite moments came from him, his goal against Rovers.
Absolutely, yeah.
The left foot strike into the top corner. What a fucking strike that was. Like, oh my God. Like, I still watch it every now and then. You know, you need a bit of cheering up or whatever, and you might watch something, and familiarity often brings me happiness. So I go back and I look at old Bowles goals, and that's one I always look at. And even the commentary, Pat Fennell was co-commentary, going, oh my God, he's just hit that, and Maris has had no chance whatsoever. It's a beautiful strike. Mandu, obviously, because of what's happened, he wouldn't be in my Bowls five-side team. But give the man credit as a footballer, he was a fucking fantastic footballer. And I hope he does well in Lincoln now, I'll be honest with you. Hope he does all right.
Yeah, I recall the moment Detcher came into a pub we were in pre-season, I think it was, or might be in a game or two in, and he said, see, Mandu. Said this full competitor dog's bollocks.
Yeah.
He's as good as I say him. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said it's just about getting his head right.
Because he came home from Brighton, wasn't it? Because he was just homesick. Yeah. His head wasn't in the right place.
He was that interested over there either.
Yeah, yeah. But the Brighton club, like, they really fancied him as well. They said this fella's going to make it, like, you know. But for whatever reason.
You haven't got the head for it. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
who would be your favourite Bowls player, I suppose? Probably fortunate enough to see Jameson.
Yeah, I was like, Jackie Jameson is like a Bowes, all-time Bowes legend. I was very fortunate to see Jackie playing a couple of times, and obviously the pitches back then were horrible. Like, you see the old English football footage, that's the way it was in Ireland as well. Still is at some grounds, in fairness. But the pitches were all mud baths. But Jackie was just this tall, elegant, bald centre-forward who could take a ball out of the sky and just do it, a drop of the shoulder, step-overs before step-overs were even fashionable, sending players fucking flying left, right and centre, and just an incredible footballer, like, worth the admission money alone just to watch him play. And he played in a fairly unsuccessful Bowles team. He was our shining light, he was our crown jewel, and everyone wanted to sign him, but he didn't. He says, no, I'm staying with Bowles, like, you know. So Jackie Jemison would have to be in the five-a-side team. Kevin Hunt, I know it's an easy choice, he's a Bowles legend, but Kevin, like, for anyone who ever watched, and again, he was another one who despite playing in mediocre Bowles teams and other bigger clubs coming in from, refused to leave. No, like, Shells were the big team at the time, they were trying to get him, and he said no, and then he got his just rewards. We won stuff under Kevin Hunt. So Kevin Hunt would always be my all-time Bowles five-a-side team. Who else? Jesus. I mean, like, just for popularity and players that have always gave me a rush, and we still sing songs about him every now and then. And he probably, like, when you think about talent-wise, he probably has no right to be even in the five-a-side. But I always loved Danny Grant. Always loved Danny Grant and what he did. And loved the fact that he came from Leinster Senior League football. Almost, he played a bit in the under-19s or whatever it was. And then came, and then Keatlong, which he was known for, gave him a chance. And straight away you go, whoa, hang on, this kid has something. And he was brilliant. Like, remember his hat-trick at Talca Park?
Yeah,
we were wearing it in our blue kit and all that, and he was just phenomenal. And I was really sad to see him go, but obviously delighted for him, he got the move to England, which he always craved. But and I loved the fact that the songs that we sing for Danny Grant, running down the wing, brilliant. So just for nostalgic purposes, I'd have Danny Grant in there. And even though he's playing against us on Friday, I've always loved Wardy. I've always loved him as a man and as a player. He is a born entertainer on and off the pitch. He's a very, very funny guy as well, you know, but just the things he can do with a ball, very few players in the league can do. I was kind of surprised he left us and went to Dundalk, because I was kind of going, Jesus, you know, he's gone up there to get more minutes, and gone, I'm not sure he's going to get the minutes up in Dundalk, but he did.
He
forced his way in and became, Wardy's obviously great. He comes an integral part of the dressing room. He's a character.
Probably what we missed last season.
Exactly. He's a buzzer, and he gets people talking and bonding and all that kind of stuff. So, and he was Wardy is an absolute baller, a magician with the football. It was a hugely entertaining player. So for that reason, I'd have Wardy in the team as well. If I was to pick a goalkeeper, like, we've been blessed with some really good goalkeepers, haven't we, over the years?
I don't think that there's never been a time where we've had a goalkeeper and I've thought,
He's shit.
Yeah.
Like, we've been very lucky.
Rovers went through a fucking spell.
I know.
Where they, no matter who they got in goal before Manus,
yeah,
were fucking brutal.
Well, Manus is, surely this is his last season.
Well, that's why they're so desperate to sign James Talbot in the off-season.
Yeah, and James said, no, I'm a Bowles man, I'm staying here. But, you mentioned James. James is a brilliant goalkeeper. Shane Supple, what a keeper he was. Brilliant. He talked about one-on-ones there earlier on.
Never in doubt.
Never. That's up, and it's grand. He's going to save it, and he does. He saves it. Free time.
One particular one I remember was down in the markets field against Limerick, and player ran one on one, and like, relax as
Anton. Yeah,
you go. He just saved it, made himself big.
And all the Limerick fans like, and then Brian Murphy was an incredible goalkeeper. And even back in the early days when I started following Bowles in the 80s, when Dermot O'Neill was like, wow, what a keeper. And he had that unusual thing where his brother was the fucking goalkeeper of Rovers. I mean, their family must have been fucked up. Like, who the fuck are we supporting here? Like, you know, Alan O'Neill, Dermot O'Neill, two of the best keepers in the country. And Dermot was a magical goalkeeper. He was a cat. And again, played in another unsuccessful Bowles team. Although he did have some great, great moments, like beating Rangers in the Daily Mail Park. He was part of that famous team. And Rocky O'Brien, getting the winner. Rocky O'Brien is from that club I was talking about, Cambridge Boys. Dave Tilson scores the winner. Part of Cambridge Boys, so I have this kind of little weird connection with the Cambridge Boys, Ringsend lads that played for Bowles over the years, you know, bizarre.
Very good. So you have your goalkeeper and goal for your five aside team.
Oh, I haven't really got a formation on here. Do you have a formation in five aside? So I picked Kevin Hunt, I picked Jackie Jemison, Keith Ward, Danny Grant. Is that it? And Vanilla. How many is that? Who do I have to pick?
Who's in goal for you?
All right,
you haven't picked that one.
If I have to pick one, gun to my head, Brian Murphy.
Brian Murphy's your keeper.
Yeah.
Danny Grant, is he playing a wing back position here?
Yeah. He's up and down. Up and Danny Grant. Danny Grant. Wardy is going to be playing. Wardy and Kevin Hunt will be playing. Well, Wardy play ahead of Kevin Hunt. Kevin Hunt will be the defensive midfielder. And then up top, Jackie. And then I need someone else, don't I? On the right. That's her.
There you go.
Now, shall we do? That's her.
That was in the squad.
Or Tocky.
If you had one player to go for a drink with, dead or alive, who would it be?
Well, I just mentioned him. Roy Keane, he doesn't drink, and I did have a brief chat with him that time. I'd love to sit down and just pick his brain and have a chat with him. He'd probably be shit company though, because he is notoriously surly and whatever. And for that reason, then, I go with the popular choice. Everyone out there is probably screaming at the podcast going, fucking Diego Maradona. And of course, Maradona would be, what a character, like, you know. I mean, obviously he had his troubles and his addictions and all that kind of stuff, but still to this day, the greatest player I've ever seen on a football pitch. The things he did on a football pitch back in an era when players were, you had to be fucking, it had to be GBH before you got a yellow. and he'd get up and just dust himself down and like, there was that famous battle with, was it Bilbao? When the Barcelona players and they all start kicking.
That's when he was the end of his Barca career, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he just said, right, fuck it, let's have it. Like, the greatest player of all time to be involved in that. Like, it shows.
After Messi.
Yeah. come here, Messi's incredible. I'm more of a World Cup and all that, but I still, to this day, still think Maradona was better. Just as a player, as an entertainer. I know it sounds mad saying that when you see what Messi does, but Maradona had everything, even though he was small and diminutive, like, he was really good in the air, especially with his hand. But to me, Maradona was the greatest of all time.
So, there's another question here that I've added this week. What does balls mean to you?
Wow, Jesus. I suppose, what's it mean to me? It sounds corny and all that, but it says to me, it's family in a wider sense, right? Obviously. The origins for Bowers for me comes from the family. You know, my dad got me into it. I had great granduncles who were members of Bowers back in the, like, 1920s and 1940s. Like, you know, and they still have their tie pins. They have their names engraved in the back of it from 1926 and all this kind of thing. Bohemian member, gold pin badges. So there's always been a family.
Dave Rotwell probably on Chanel.
Yeah. But also the fact, in the wider sense, this is where the corny bit comes in. The sense of family by being a fan of Bowes and going down to Daily Mount every second Friday, and the feeling of nostalgia, warmth, excitement, all of those emotions going through your body, seeing those familiar faces, you say hello to them, you smile at them, you don't necessarily know their name, but you're glad to see them, you're happy to see them, there's a comfort in it, and it's the one and only, I think, kind of release I have in life at the moment, you know. Like, when you're working and, you know, you've got family stuff going on, that Friday night is so sacred, it's so precious. And to me, it's my other family outlet. That's what Bowes means to me.
Very good. And you did talk about, you know, how you were brought into it. You brought Mr. PJ Gallagher into Bowes.
Ah, Jesus, yeah. That's one of my proudest achievements as a Bowes fan, getting PJ.
Because when he came, it was a big thing, like, when PJ started going to Bowes match. You know, he was a big name.
He was, yeah, because he was still doing his stand-up at the time and all that, and, you know, everyone, he's synonymous with Naked Camera and the characters that he played in Naked Camera. That's what shot him through the stratosphere. Mm. But we had a conversation. We were in, this sounds so wanky, we were in Dubai, but we were actually remembering conversation. We were actually in Dubai.
You and Christy, Daniel and PJ.
we were doing an Irish Comedy Festival over in Dubai, and Paige says to me, he says, you still going out to Bowes and all that? He says, yeah, I do, yeah. He says, he says, do you like it? He says, of course I like it. I fucking love it. Like, it's been doing it most of my life, like, you know. And PJ, you know, not an awful lot of people knew him at the time, like, because all he saw was PJ, the comedian, the characters and all that, the filthy young Jake Stevens, all that, was, like, but what not a lot of people don't really realise is that PJ loves his sport, particularly, obviously, the motorsport. He was a motorbike freak and still is to this day. But he was at the Olympics and all that. He saw Ronaldo scoring for Real Madrid a hat trick at Old Trafford to beat United. When the whole stadium applauded Ronaldo, they were like, fucking hell, that's amazing what he's just done there. But he says, you know, I'm a patriot. I like to call myself a patriot, but to my
shame of never being to a League of Ireland game. I said, well, that's changing next season. And he goes, right, well, who am I going out to see? And I was like, what? What the fuck are you asking me? You're going down to fucking Bowles. He goes, oh, right, Bowles. Because I think his sister, our kids had a little association with Shells. I think they might play in the academy or something like that. So he was kind of going, I was going, you're asking me the question. Who the fuck do you think I'm going to say? You're coming down to Bowles. And his very first match was the infamous Paddy Kavanagh game.
That's right, yeah.
He runs to the shipper van. And again, I'm not there. I'm doing a gig. I'm in the Axis. So Alex.
Who did he go with it again? Alex.
You remember Alex and my brother Fintan. And they went to the match together. And I says to the boys, I says, look, Pete's gone with there. He's going to be on his own. Look out for him. And they obviously knew who he was, you know, because they were like, they were fans of his as well, like, you know.
The fans even looking out for him as
much. Yeah. And I said it, oh yeah. So I was doing this gig, and it was a gig. It was one, sometimes you can get out of gigs, but I couldn't get out of this gig because I put on this gig for a girl who was in a bad car crash, and Jesus Christ, she was in an awful way. So I put on this gig in the Axis up in Ballymun to raise money for her, because she had kids and all that kind of thing. She was a single parent or whatever, so I couldn't just go, oh, I can't make it tonight, like, you know, go down to see Bowles and Rovers, like, you know. So I keep checking my phone, and the first thing I see is a picture of PJ and Fintan and Alex in the Jody stand with the scars and all, yeah. And I'm going, ah, fucking delighted they met up and they're getting in. And anyway, as the match transpired, Rovers got one up, 1-1, 2-1, 3-1, battling the Paddy Kavanagh chipper fan goals, the most famous goal you'll see. But PJ then sends me this big, beautiful text afterwards. Goes, Eric, I've been to the Olympics. I've been to, you know, been to the Tour de France. I've seen Ronaldo score hat-tricks. I have never seen that like that before in my life. He said, there was grown men being passed over. He said, there was limbs everywhere. And he said, from that moment on, he said, I was hooked. And even to this day, Jordan, he'll say to me, I don't know whether I love you or hate you for getting me into this.
Getting me into it.
I'm here now, you know. And PJ, like, 5 years out, he's already got Bowes tattoos and everything. Like, so, oh, wait, you see, he's got this bike coming out with this Vespa. Fucking red and black, the stripes, the crest and everything on it. It's coming out soon, wait, you see.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. But even said, even when I was sort of growing up, you know, it would have been a naked camera that was being.
Yeah.
Like, if you had to tell me, like, have you been on stage with PJ? If we had to tell 10-year-old Jordan,
here we go.
Nah, no. I'd be like, I am mine. Even like, he thinks Jake Stevens haunts him.
Yeah.
My yelfully. Fucking still walks around, comes in Sunday morning, the fryer's on, he'll come in with the paper and the fresh loaf pan next to him, all you get is back of the head with the paper. Who am I? Whistling, who am I? He goes, who you been pretending to be the last 20 poxy years? It's like fucking Steve, they leave you bleeding out. So if he thinks I haunt fucking him, it fucking still haunts me.
It's funny you should say that. Like, I remember one of Peter's greatest routines he used to do was like, because every, like, as you say, he was almost haunted. Everyone would be coming up, hitting with newspapers and all that. And he, obviously, you know, as a public figure that he was in, Peter's a nice guy. He'll always make time. He'll always have a chat with him, take photographs, whatever. But sometimes it would just get too much, like, you know. But he said there was one time he was walking down the road and this bloke and his yonkly stopped him and go, ah, oh, PJ. Yonkly does impressions of you. And his PJ in his head going, oh, fuck. And he got, but Peter's not, you know, outwardly he's gone, all right, yeah, that's cool, yeah. So he's expecting fucking. And the owner's going, no, Dad, I don't want to do it. And he's going, just fucking do it. Show me your impression. Show me your impression. And here's Peter going, for fuck's sake, will you hurry up and do something, like, you know. And the kid just pulls his hood up and goes, come here, you want to squish the Mickey, aren't you? Peter thought Jake Steves was coming, he did the filthy elbow, and like, the owner's only 5 or something.
Fucking. I suppose we'll wrap up there on that sort and we'll move on to this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We do forget sometimes. There is a match coming up this Friday.
I know, yeah.
Great vibrancy around the club at the moment.
You know, things are, you know, I did a gig last Monday, Jordan, in Mountjoy for the Bowes Foundation, and Declan Devine was there and he got up and said a few words and all that. And I did my stand up, whatever, and there was a band on as well. And I got talking to him on Vicar Street that night as well, obviously, but. Yeah. I was sober on Monday in the prison, you know, and chatting with him. And he's a hugely impressive man. He has an authority about him.
Yeah, you can feel a bit of, you know, respect probably.
Exactly, yeah. And and I think the Nordic accent helps it as well. He's got this deep, booming Northern Derry accent. And you know, he was talking to me about how excited. Actually, one of the fellas that was organising the gig for the foundation turned around to Deck and asked him a question. And Deck responded with, oh, man. All I got in my head right now are the strengths and weaknesses of Cork City. And I went, oh yeah, that's my manager right there. But like very warm individual, very smiley, chatting, likes to laugh and all that, you know. But he was, I got the impression of him. He said to me, he said, the lads are working really, really hard. Everything we're asking of them, they're doing. He said, there's a good spirit in the camp. The facilities are amazing. He said, last year, Bowes would probably do 9-10 hours training a week. This year, it's up to 40 because they're gone full time. Obviously, they're not running around for 40 fucking hours, yeah. But they're practicing set pieces. They're doing their fitness and strength and condition. They're doing data analysis. They're going in and watching videos, yoga. They're having lunch together, having breakfast together. All of this stuff is I think, conducive to a good team spirit. And obviously, getting off to a win in Turner's Cross, a brilliant start for us. And it's easy for us all to get excited, and we are. But as you said, Jordan, why not get excited? You're right. You know, these moments are few and far between. So let's fucking celebrate Bowes being on top of the league for now. But Dundalk, you know, if you were to judge it on the first round of fixtures, which is you probably shouldn't do because it's the first game of the season. By all accounts, UCD should have beaten Dundalk up in Oriel the other night. I mentioned my daughter, Jodie. She lives up in Drumiskin now, just outside Dundalk. And her fella, the father of my grandson, is a Dundalk season ticket holder. So he says to me, Eric, there's no way you're getting Teddy down to your house. You come back with a fucking Bowes tattoo. So I'm going to try and make him into a Man United fan or something, like, you know, but I won't get him as a Bowes, unfortunately. But yeah, Dundalk, he said to me as well, no, he says we're very poor. What, like he said, some of the new signings wasn't impressed with. But again, first game, you know, it's difficult to judge Atten on the first game, like, you know.
Yeah, the important thing is Staying Out is officially sold out as of this afternoon.
Amazing, isn't that great to hear, like, you know,
4,500. I think I've seen the PRO tweet that it's the biggest domestic crowd we've had in over 20 years.
Wow, that's fucking great to hear. And then we have the little mono stand for the away fans. The great thing is, like, unlike going up to Oriel Park, if it rains, at least they're covered.
Yeah, you're fucking...
Do you know what I mean?
Out there fucking with a brother, if you're lucky.
And you're still seeing a match, I'm like, geez, you've got to Oriel Park. And it, fucking hell, it's such a horrible part of the ground to be the away sport. Because like when the ball goes down that end of the pitch, you're all like this. Nobody can see what's fucking going on. It's an awful place.
Yeah. But we're heading to Dahlia Friday.
Yes, bring it on.
4,500. 4,100 balls, give or take.
Yeah.
And we've got... Win under our belt.
Yeah.
The Voyen in. Surely this season now we have to have a bit of unity in the stands.
Oh.
Atmosphere, we have to get the place boom.
Yeah, and I think you're very correct in saying that, Jordan, because, you know, Bowes fans will have noticed a kind of shift in the singing sections, for instance, in Bowes. Like, there seems to be a bit of a division there. Like, there's singing in Block A, there's singing in Block G. Like, why can't we all just... to get together and make one big noise.
I know the club would probably do look at it and see what they can do. Personally, I think that each the clubs come up with a bit of a statement and say maybe Block E, possibly Block D is going to be singing section if you're looking to sit down. The problem is, I know there's couldn't start sitting there since the 1980s, they'll tell you, I've been sitting here for fucking 100 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we've had the mouth.
Yeah, like, people need to look at the bigger picture and go.
Look at the bigger picture and... Yeah. Block A and Block G sort of avoids things. It's very, as you said, it's fucking the legacy Bowes fans down in A, you know, who are these cunts up in G. That needs to change. Yeah. You can't have these fucking, who are these cunts down there anymore.
And we should welcome new fans.
We should welcome new fans, absolutely. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So, I think that there should be some sort of, I don't know, fan liaison officer, and there should be some sort of communication how we're going to make this better for everyone. I know the argument as well, but we just need a bigger stadium. I personally think it can be sorted, if we want to sort it.
What would you do, Jordan?
If we had the money, which we're not going to get off the council, it's not worth time, it'd be turning a bit of a terrace into Block F and G to get them in. I would honestly shift, tell people in Block E, make a statement and say this is a singing section. Yeah. It needs to be make a Block D, a singing section too. That'd be my quick fix. I'm talking about the bar, the club could tell me now if really this is the counter argument, why can't be done? And maybe they're right.
Well, I'm sure they listen to it. You know what I mean?
Well,
you
mentioned that's my 2 pence, not what yours are.
That should be, no, I agree with everything you say. I think there's like, there's nothing like a raucous stadium. Like, it's such a cliche, but it can genuinely be our 12th man sometimes. There's been nights when the stadium is rocking and it's helped the team over the line, whether it be holding on to a lead or getting a lead or whatever. And that comes from unity with the fans. And I know there's been a division because there's newer fans and older fans are a little setting their ways and going, here are these new cunts and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, we're all supporting Bohemian Football Club. We all want Bowes to be successful. And the only way that's going to happen, well, not the only way, but one of the best ways we can make it more possible is if we're all together singing the same songs at the same time, creating that noise and colour and atmosphere. Like, you look at Turner's Cross the other night, I know there's only 700 Bows fans there, but the unity that was there, you mentioned it yourself, Jordan, like there was one of the best away atmospheres in your top five, just because of the unity and the non-stop singing and everyone kind of like as one, you know?
Yeah, and so we went down to Turner's Cross over the years and there'd be 100 Bows fans there.
Yeah.
I said, like, there was a time there's 1,000 Bows fans and 100 going to away matches. There was a time where you'd know every Bows fan at the away match, where you'd know their face.
Yeah.
Now, I went down to Turner's Cross, I'm not going to tell you 100 people I didn't see.
Yeah.
I didn't actually see them from when I went into the stadium and from when I left the stadium.
Yeah.
Which is a fucking great thing. And I know last season being a bit, oh, here are these cunts. You have to move by.
Oh, said, fucking bring it in.
Evolve or die. Like,
yeah, and they're spending their money here as well. Like, you know, every cent, we can do with every cent that we're getting. Like, you know.
So I think we need to move on past the fucking, the legacy fans and the fans. And everyone just has to go as one because, as you said, the League of Ireland is a different product as it was a couple of years ago.
The same way, like, I mean, you look at other clubs, like, you look at Rovers, even Rovers. Rovers are a big club, okay, big fan base, but a lot of them are new fans as well from Tallaght. You know what I mean? They've only moved to Tallaght the last few years, so a lot of their fan base are new. They're not legacy fans, so to speak, but they seem to have kind of got together and sorted out whatever differences. So, you know, Bow should be doing something similar.
We need to move it on, and so moving on to the match, I believe we're about to hopefully sign another centre back this week.
Amazing. Because that's what we want.
An experienced one as well. There's no one known, so hopefully.
All right, because what's your man's name, the Polish lab you have? What's his name again?
Casper the Ghost.
Casper, yeah, that's right. I was going to try and pronounce his surname, but Casper the Ghost will do me. But yeah, Casper, he looked decent. He's a big lad, isn't he? He's a big lad. But he can move. Like he's not like a slouch or not like that.
Very no nonsense as well throughout the game. Like, no
problem. I like that in a centre half, you know. Doesn't take any shit. There might have been one or two little communication issues with Talbot and himself, like, you know. I mean, maybe, you know, for the risk of sounding racist, Talbot needs to work on his Eastern European accent or something.
Needs to work on his English.
Yeah.
The rest of us English people. But I suppose I can't imagine there being Euro as much change to the team. Maybe Booker going into the midfield.
Booker going into midfield if, what's your man's name? Ben, is it?
Yeah.
Comes in at right full. Did he get a concussion after like 4 seconds of his debut?
Yeah, he went in to prove himself and
he got slaughtered against Longford or whatever it was. But I think I don't know. Somebody told me he could be out for 2 weeks. So I'm not sure he'll even be available on Friday. So if that's the case, you're probably looking at Booker being back there again. I think Akintunde walked off with an injury there the other night. I don't know how bad that is.
I'm not so much sure if it was cramp or not.
I hope so.
I think he's only... I said it last week on the podcast. I heard from Derry fans that he's only got 60 minutes in him.
Right.
So it could be a case where that team, like, 60 minutes.
Well, I mean, they're a good 60 minutes, happy days, you know.
You get that 60 minutes every week, we're doing all right.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dean Williams is a player who's haunted us so many times over the last couple of seasons. He was playing for us. Yeah. And I like Dean Williams. I think he's a real fox in the box. You know, I don't know whether he'll come in for Akintunde. But we've got Afolabi up front. The only change, it'd probably be the way the team finished. So they probably have McDaid starting for Akintunde.
Yeah.
That's the only change I could see really happening. Unless this new lad that you think we're signing on Wednesday comes in and just looks amazing in training. And he goes straight into the team on Friday night. Like, you know?
That's just the only thing I can think of, all right.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be a very much non-change Bowles team if Devine can have that.
Absolutely.
Pending in.
Great to have Grant Horton back, isn't it?
Oh, big time, yeah.
He's a fucking baller.
But I gather his contract is up and he's more or less done deal.
Really?
Well, for signing for him for
a full time. Such a fucking coup for us. Like, he's a top fucking player. Like, when he went back injured the last time, he was a huge loss to us. Like, in an underperforming team, he was our best player.
Absolutely. But without a shadow of a doubt, he was the best player. So hopefully now him back fully fit, Casper the Ghost, and this new signing, whoever he may be.
Yeah.
He could be out by the time we get this podcast out.
Please, God.
Young Ben might not make it, your sense. So Booker right back?
Booker, I think, would have to be right back. And I was usually impressed with Booker. I mean, I've been out of the game for a year and just stepping back as if he'd never left.
It's hard to change that midfield all the same.
No, it's a good, strong midfield, capable of competing with anyone in the league. Like Flores, McDonnell.
Q.
Yeah, I mean, mentioned earlier on, but Ali Q. I mean, if he goes on the rest of the season the way he started it, we're in for a hell of a season.
Absolutely. I suppose I'll get your prediction for the score on Friday.
Right, I'm going to go 2-1 Bows.
2-1 Bows, I'm going to go 2-0 Bows.
Another clean sheet. I know it wasn't a clean sheet last time.
A bit of air confidence about the place.
Yeah.
I think Dundalk are probably a bit worried and maybe even rattled about the start of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's new owners coming in and that, but well, no, I think Baz is going to give the confidence to him, and there'll be no podcast next week, so we'll just do a bit of brief one on shares.
Oh yeah.
Arse back up in the air. Looking for the next punt at the walk, boy. Seeing as the Southampton owner pulled out following their cup final attendance.
Was that what it was? Was it?
Yeah, he was over. Oh, he got confirmation today off them that the owners were over that week and they were looking at bringing kids over and putting them through the academy.
Wow.
And as well as that, but I think they're seeing the cup final attendance and he said, where's the prospect? Where's the crowd here? If you can only get 4,000 fans out on your big day.
Yeah, there's not much potential there.
Where's the potential?
Yeah.
For growth.
Wow, didn't know that.
So I think Mr. Doyle, it looks like he's possibly, I think there's every chance he could wash his hands with Shelbourne FC.
Really?
And get rid of it. I think he's probably put enough of his own money in. He's not saying much of a back, maybe.
I was surprised by their, that kind of echoes what you're saying though, because I was surprised that their kind of lack of transfer activity in the off season. I thought, you know, after last season, like the avoided relegation, they had a cup final already. They got their arses handed to them in the final, but they still got to a cup final. So very much a successful season. And the noises coming out of Talca was that they were going to build on this, get new players in. There's going to be investment in the club, but that doesn't seem to have materialised. So, but at the end of the day, Jordan, it's a fucking Dublin derby. And
Duff is guaranteed to get one thing out of his players at 100%.
This is it. Like him or hate him, I think he's been a good addition to the league, Damien Duff, you know. The fact that he brings, you know, he's a star, man. He's one of our best ever players, Ireland's best ever players, like, you know. And he's gone into the League of Ireland and he's made people who aren't into the League of Ireland sit up and notice and go, geez, Damien Duff's in the League of Ireland. And that might bring one or two people, so, you know.
There is an element to that, absolutely. I think there's probably, Shelbourne will probably get from that.
Yeah, absolutely.
From a fan's perspective. Yeah. From what I gather, he's a good coach, too. Yeah. When you hear the stuff that comes out of his mouth is different altogether. He said, hey, Dervin was one of the best players in the Premier Division of the three.
Mm-hmm.
He's now on loan back in Longford.
Yeah, for 3 months. So, to get minutes into his legs. I'm going, oh, wow. Because I thought he was one of the better players towards the end of last season as well.
Yeah, so strange down what's happening down there. You don't know what the Save Talca Park campaign came out this week and they wanted some clarity from the DCC. The DCC responded and said, nothing to do with us. You're the ones meant to be buying it and doing it up.
Ah, right. So there's a little bit of stagnancy going on there.
But at
the end of the day, Jordan, what happens on the pitch, isn't it? On the night, the 90 minutes, and the rest, the whistle blows. Well, of course, like looking at it now, like what did they drew nil all with Drogheda, but they battered them, didn't they? Apparently,
zero shots on target.
Yeah, but like, they still think they. Did you see a man's miss? Oh my Jesus Christ!
Matty Smith,
who I really rate. I think he's a really good player.
I suppose he went there.
I was hoping we get him. You know, he went on loan from Derry last season and then signed a permanent. But what a miss! Jesus Christ, mortified. That was all over TikTok. Everyone around the world is saying that.
You and your Joe, that he on TikTok.
Yeah. Did anyone see this miss?
Yeah. So now I think we'll predict a 9.79.
Wow, Jesus! Do you know what? Jordan, why not dream big? Why not dream big? I'm going to go. I remember, like, we've had a couple of visits there last year. Obviously, let's never speak of that cup match, right? That was just disgusting.
They haven't beaten us in the league there since 2006.
Wow. But do you remember the other league match earlier on the season? We beat them 4-1.
Yeah.
They destroyed them. Because that's what we're capable of. So I'm going to go. What did you say?
I said 2-0.
I'm going to go 3-1. That was 3-1. Jesus Christ.
Run away with this league.
9 points plus 6 goal difference.
And then after that, we're playing Drogheda and UCD.
Oh, wow. So that's, what, 15 out of 15 points, is it?
this is it. It's already done, isn't it? Why are we even bothering playing the rest of the season?
Blow it up enough.
Give it over now, but look, it's a dream and why not?
Why not, Jordan? You know what I mean? Every new season brings new hope. And I just, as I said, spoke to Divine. I've spoken to two of the new players and players who are in the camp and behind the scenes and everything's positive. There's a real good vibe around the place and let's hope Daily Mount is absolutely bouncing on Friday night.
Yeah, well, the final question now is, what's your word to Bowls fans? But that probably summarises it up.
Yeah, as Jordan touched on it there is that little division at the moment. Let's get united and fucking, and make it a fucking fortress again. Make Daily Mount, sometimes teams come to Daily Mount,
make Daily Mount great again.
Make Daily Mount great. Let's hear the Daily Mount roar. That historic Daily Mount roar. Let that roar fucking propel us to a league title. Why not?
Absolutely. So, as we sign off every week, come on the fucking balls.
Come on the fucking balls.
Because we all follow balls wherever they play. We don't care if it's home or away. We are the boys, and we're proud of our names. So we'll all bounce around and we'll sing it again.